Well, g'day. Good Friday afternoon. I haven't done a beer Friday afternoon for a while. Let's make up for lost time. Now, because there are inevitably questions about the beer, the beer of today, it's my favorite beer. It's the Pirate Life Double IPA. It's not an everyday beer, but I was going to say it's been a long week. I don't even think it's been a long week. In fact, I realized today, just as I was preparing the content for this, it's been a short week. The reason it's been a short week is we had a public holiday on Monday, which normally wouldn't mean anything to me because it's a day that ends in Y, so it's work stuff. But we did go away for the long weekend. I only posted a couple of photos. Went to the island previously known as Fraser Island, now known as Gari up here, which is great. Now, I posted a bunch of photos when I was there in December when we took some Norwegian friends, and it was summer. That's what happens here in December. It's summer. I know things are the other way around in other parts of the world. Not where you are, Brendan. You're in Victoria. Never, well, it's either cold or hot or windy or rainy in Victoria. Maybe all on the same day. Anyway, I posted a bunch of photos in December and it was just an epically, epically cool spot. And we taken some Norwegian friends there, decided to take the kids there this time. Now, the cool thing about going to Fraser Island is that you hire a four-wheel drive, and you drive on the beach, and you drive through the island, world's largest sand island, is a claim to fame. Now, you might be wondering, our son asked this, he's like, aren't all islands really sand underneath? Well, apparently a sand island is when you get enough sand sort of blown up and accumulated over however many hundreds of thousands, millions of years, whatever, it builds an island. So the whole thing is based on sand. And you just spend the time, like, driving down the beaches. Beaches are roads on Fraser Island. They're roads with speed limits, with police, the whole box and dice, sometimes with aeroplanes landing on them too. You drive down part of the road and there's a sign about looking out for aircraft, and then like a little Cessna, it just comes and lands amongst the cars. It's beautiful. It is such a nice place. About a 3.5 hour drive north of here before you pick up the four-wheel drive, and then you pick it up and it's always a shitty old Land Cruiser, which is fine, because if you have a nice one, you really don't want that on Fraser Island. It's a lot of like close trees and stuff like that. It had been raining a bit, so we got very messy. Anyway, awesome fun. So it has felt like a shorter week for me. So it hasn't been that hard of a week, if I'm honest, but there hasn't been a lot to talk about, except for the thing I'm going to talk about today, particularly the last one about this post-millennial data breach. That was, that's an interesting one for many reasons. Oh. The Game Over says, a bit late today, I get to see it live. Well, depends where you are. I believe it is about 7:30 in the morning in the UK. I sort of timed this to go, what's the earliest I can get away with so that I can do this and then I can just tune out for the rest of the day. Brennan says, come on, mate. Sunny in one corner, snowy in another, stormy in a third, inclusive wind, and normal in the fourth. For those of you from the other end of the world, Victoria is where people leave from to come to where I live. Is that fair, Brendan? I think that's probably a fair statement. Victorians everywhere here. Sponsor this week is Collide. Now, Collide needs no introduction because they have been a massive sponsor this year and in previous years, but we'll go through and do it anyway. Collide believes that maintaining endpoint security shouldn't mean compromising employee privacy. Check out our manifesto, Honest Security, and linking through to Collide website, a guide to endpoint security and device management that doesn't erode your values. I actually want to write a blog post, tangential to Collide, I'll come back to you. I want to write a blog post, which is effectively like the State of the Union of Have I Been Pwned, which does talk a lot about the values. I just feel as there's things there that I need to, it's like, you know, like biting away at the back of my head that needs to get in there. The tenets of honest security, do go through and have a look at Collide's material on that. And as I mentioned several times before, Collide now are part of the 1Password family as well. I still need to get a good understanding of how all that works. So I will definitely make sure that I speak to folks on both sides of that now union of 1Password and Collide. Timo, what's your view on the crazy Australian housing market? Is it a bubble and Australia a giant Ponzi scheme? All right, big sip. Sure, we got time. Why not? I tune out if this is you. I'm looking up a blog post here. I wrote something 6 years ago now, which is very tangential to what I normally write. I'm going to drop it in the chat here. 10 personal financial lessons for technology professionals. Now, I am not a financial advisor. I think you got to give that advice. You got to give that advice that I'm not an advisor. But I wrote this having been in this industry for a long time and being quite interested in the housing market, among other things. And in here, how do I actually say it? Properties. I bought a lot of property. That's what I want to say a lot. It's double figures in terms of the numbers, but I started when I was very young compared to now. I started more than 20 years ago buying investments and paying a lot of attention to the property market. And I haven't paid as much attention in recent years, if I'm completely honest, because I've been very distracted by data breaches and 3D printing and home automation. But I was very into it, and it was a very, very good time to do that early when you're young. There's a whole blog post about that, which I just shared. I do watch it quite a bit, and I have been thinking a lot about wanting to buy some more property too. The really weird thing about Australia is we've got a combination of really interesting factors. Now, particularly here in Queensland at the moment, and I don't want this to become like the property investment thing because I'm not an advisor. I don't want to go and talk about data breaches. I've found it very surprising that the prices have stayed so high. And there are some stupid prices. Literally the street we live in here, some of the prices that we're seeing here are mind-boggling, which is great for this place since I bought it long enough ago. But it's crazy. And I've been looking at buying things that are investments, and they're not places that I want to live in. They're financially motivated and so on and so forth. And I couldn't really wrap my head around why the price was so high. And speaking to friends who are real estate agents and in banking and so on, they said the two factors that keep it really high here at the moment, even whilst our interest rates have gone up, is they said, number one, there's a huge amount of migration. People like Brendan leaving Victoria to move to Queensland. We've got a lot of people moving to Queensland. A lot of that happened during COVID, and a lot of it is still happening since, particularly as you get more remote work and you can live anywhere. Why not be somewhere sunny where there's not as bad traffic and angry people like Sydney? And the other thing is that because the rental market is so tight, that the rents stay very high and the yields stay very high, so it looks really attractive for investors. So why wouldn't the prices stay high? But it does, I do agree, it does feel overinflated. And I suspect that given the course of time, at the very least, we'll just see prices remain stagnant for a very long time. Maybe we'll see them start to reverse a bit. It doesn't look like we're heading anywhere for a crash. And it seems like the RBA might even lift the rates again this year. Anyway, it's a very good question. I have actually wanted to write a follow-up to that blog post I just shared because I have many other thoughts since then. Simon is in Sydney, where the people in the traffic are angry. Rob says, quiet, you jinx it. I only just got in the game, in the property game. Well, hopefully you didn't get in just now while it's so high and then it only goes to, what do they say? It's not timing the market, it's time in the market. So you give it long enough, it'll be fine. Brendan said they had a quick look at real estate back home in Morwell. Apparently housing is starting to break the 1 million mark. Noting that, for those who are unaware, Morwell is 2 hours east of Melbourne. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? It's getting like that in the Gold Coast too. And I so clearly, distinctly remember I lived in Sydney from 2000 through to 2015. And I clearly remember when they hit a million. And this is a million Aussie dollars. If you're in America, it's about 666,000 because it's about 1.5 to 1 at the moment. If you're in the UK, that's about £400,000. I remember when I hit that in Sydney and it was constantly about half the price here, and we're just now starting to tap into that 1 million mark here as well, which is nuts. Mind you, it's probably nearly 2 million in Sydney now. I don't even know. Someone says, happy looking at the Harbour Bridge and the Opera House. Well, you're definitely living in some expensive property there, that's for sure. So, yeah, good on you, mate. Well done. Rob says, couldn't get a house in the UK in my hometown for 50,000 GBP. End up buying in Brisbane for near 500,000, which I assume is Oz. you still get a lot for your money here in Australia, and particularly here in Queensland, and I think the Gold Coast is still pretty solid. Depends where you go. T-Mark says, every time I drive in Queensland, shift as well as plates, I get clowns and four-wheel drives tailgating me. What's up with that? I've come to think this is a small brain, edging as well thing. The thing I always found, being objective about it, having all that time in Sydney, but my heart here in the Gold Coast, is I, when I drive down to Sydney and I'm on that F3 and I get past about Newcastle, and Charlotte says this as well, I turn into like, I don't know, all my patience goes, the distance between the car in front reduces, the hands grab the steering wheel tighter. There's something about Sydney where everyone's just angry and in a rush and going really slow because of all the traffic. And then I come here and they're just constantly complacent and running red lights, which I fucking hate. The number of times here on the Gold Coast, let's say I'm on pole position, all right, front row, and my light goes green, and a second later, some car goes whipping across. So they have not only missed the orange altogether, seen the red, and waited 2 seconds, and complacency driving kills me. I love driving. I'm passionate about driving, and I hate people that don't take it seriously. And there's the danger thing as well. Apparently, Sydney house is averaging 1.6 million. John Simons, for those of you not heard, John Simons, founder of Aussie Home Loans, had some financial woes over the years, turned out very rich, is selling his Point Piper waterfront house for $200 million. The reason that he gave was because he wants to travel more. Does he need the money to travel more? Jeez. Anyway. Strauss says, my boss, landlord, has 8 buildings in Sydney, is increasing rent all the time. I'm glad to be working for him so mine doesn't. Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be awkward, wouldn't it? Stephen says, didn't expect to catch me on Friday. Happy Friday. All right, let's talk about data breachy stuff. Now, I woke up this week to a very pleasing email from the NCA. Hello to all the friends at the National Crime Agency in the UK. Lockbit leader unmasked and sanctioned. Now, we saw a Lockbit takedown, I want to say it was like 6 weeks ago, from the NCA and friends. And as I've said many times before, the more time I spend with every single one of these law enforcement agencies, NCA, FBI, the AFP here in Australia, the Polizia now, the Dutch, Canadian Mounties, these agencies are doing wonderful stuff. And I guarantee you, everyone who's listening to this going, oh, they just need to get up in our things, you would want to go and have a beer with every single one of them, because they're just consistently lovely, wonderful people and doing really cool stuff. So they also work together very, very closely. And even just looking at this NCA announcement here and looking at the League of Nations of logos here is wonderful. And there is a huge amount of cooperation between law enforcement agencies in our respective parts of the world. Looking at just even at the flags here on the Lockbit takedown site, the Finnish flag, the German flag, the French are there, the Swiss are there, the Japanese flag is there. Like, everybody is in there together trying to, everybody except Russia is in there together trying to stop this stuff from happening. Now, they said at the time that they knew who Lockbit Sup, the mastermind of Lockbit, was. And they weren't going to say, but they kind of left that dangling there. And in fact, I do remember a comment they made to the effect of, they might, Lockbit Sup might find it hard finding parts for his Mercedes at the moment, which A, pretty directly implied he had a Mercedes, and B, seemed to be a little bit of a nod to, yeah, if you're in Russia at the moment, you might be having trouble getting parts from more different countries, let's just say that. So they said they were going to name the guy, and they said they'd taken things down. And of course, there's always some degree of showmanship from the law enforcement agencies, and I would say a very large degree of showmanship from the criminals behind it. And of course, there was lots of chest beating and bravado about, well, no, it's not been taken down. We've still got all these affiliates. They're still posting a lot of alleged ransomed companies to the various web assets. It seems like a lot of them are reposts, old things that have happened before. But the thing that was really cool about waking up during the week, must have been 48 hours ago maybe, seeing this is that maybe it's just the photo of the guy. I'm going to drop this in the chat for folks that haven't seen this already. This is the NCA's link. They've doxed this guy. I'm just going to read it here, the first couple of paragraphs. The leader of what was once the world's most harmful cybercrime group has been unmasked and sanctioned by the UK, US and Australia following an NCA-led international disruption campaign. The sanctions against Russian national, surprise, surprise, Dmitry Khoroshev pictured. And when you look at this, he's like, there's a little bit of blue steel going on in the photo of this guy. Little bit of blue steel. Sort of arms crossed, very serious looking guy. The administrator and developer of the Lockbit ransomware group. Anyway, being announced by all these folks just here, he thrived on anonymity and offered a $10 million reward to anyone who could reveal his identity. Does the NCA get that? That'd be cool, wouldn't it? That'd be a lot of, it's going to say a lot of beer money for the NCA. I'm sure the NCA would actually do something really, really useful with that if they got the $10 million. Anyway, one of the things that was particularly fascinating about this, let's make sure I got my numbers right here. I was looking for 100, but in here it says attacks targeted over 100 hospitals and healthcare companies. Somewhere in here, the number that I have seen is the guy apparently earned about $100 million. $100 million from ransoming companies. Now, one of the shots here that is particularly funny is I've got a photo of the guy wearing AirPods. I can't even demonstrate what it's like because my AirPods aren't here. And one of the AirPods is just like sticking straight out the side of his right ear. And he's got this half stupid smile on his face. So I don't know why. But it is lovely to see him named. Now, of course, Lockbit Sup, the account Lockbit Sup, had then come out and said, oh, isn't it terrible? This poor guy has been incorrectly identified as the founder and operator of Lockbit. You would have to think with all the resources that the NCA, the AFP, the FBI, and all the other acronyms have between themselves, they would not misattribute something so significant. Because the consequences on the individual are severe. If you don't already listen to Risky Biz, have a listen to Patrick Gray's Risky Biz, fellow Aussie just down here. He's in the state where people start to get angry and the real estate's more expensive, but he's in the good part of it, the northern part. Have a listen to the discussions he's had about that just this week and the pressure that even Russian nationals who aren't going to be extradited are then placed under once they're identified and known to have a great big fat Bitcoin stash of currency. That's hard work. You know, if you're this guy at the moment, you're going to be having a bad time. I mean, look, he's Russian. He wasn't going to be going on holidays to probably anywhere anyway, outside of Russia. But now, yeah, hard time for Dmitry. Have a look at the comments here. T-Mock says, how complicated should a master password be to protect a password manager file? What kind of complexity of passwords would a government agency be able to brute force? First of all, why are you worried about a government agency? I get the question, but I think the discussion needs to be for every single security decision, who are you protecting your things from? So for example, it's not that I don't think governments might want to siphon up my data in the ways that we have seen it done en masse before, but unless it's the Russian government who's now pissed at me after what I just said, I don't think anyone's too worried about trying to get into my things, should they get my device. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you deliberately weaken things because you don't necessarily think that a threat actor is going to be that sophisticated, but I've got to find the commensurate level of security and usability balance. So, in answer to your question, the master password should be something that is unique enough that you can remember it and that you can type it in without too much difficulty. Because between my phone, my iPad, this PC, that PC, and the other PC, which I still haven't retired, I've got five different devices that I will be challenged on a fairly regular cadence, which you can specify, to enter my master password. So I need to be able to do it without it being a nightmare. Also, that's not the only thing that you need. If you have one of these devices, you can get in with that alone. But if you don't, you also need the secret key and you need the second factor of authentication. So I need to look at it and go, say my phone, because it's probably the most mobile thing of all. How strong does the security need to be on this? Because you've got to be able to unlock the device itself, which you can either do with your face or with a PIN. And then you've got to be able to have the master password to get in after that as well. Also, if you fail the PIN 10 times, the phone will automatically raise itself, which is a setting that you all should turn on, because even if you screw it up and your kid picks it up, you can just restore from iCloud. So that's how I feel about that. So practical. Nick007 says, good morning, Troy. It's gorgeous day in London. Yeah, right. Occasionally it is. I'll give you credit for that. I had a really nice day in London in Gatwick in September. It was lovely. I was in Gatwick in September and it was over 30 degrees sitting by a pool in a lovely estate. Very, very nice. Brendan says, it being lock bits up looks way too professional for a mugshot. Well, it's not a mugshot. It's obviously his, I don't know, he's like his OnlyFans cover photo. I don't know what it is. But it is an interesting photo now that you think about it, because it's got a proper backdrop as well. You know, like what's Dimitri doing here? I don't know. Then again, you got $100 million, you can afford some good photos. So yeah. Stratus says, I wonder how long DNA will be scanned to unlock devices. This actually brings us back a little bit to a discussion from last week about the clubs New South Wales and about the terminals where the Filipino developers, I wonder if this website's still up actually. We might have new things to talk about. Have I been? Out of Box was the name of the company. So Aussie company Out of Box spoke about this at length last week. Out of Box had a bunch of their data taken, allegedly from Filipino developers who didn't get paid, although an Aussie did get arrested. Well, someone in Australia got arrested. I don't know if they're Aussie or not. Someone got arrested for that. A lot of headlines here around biometric data because it used scanned images of your face to authenticate you as you walked into the pub. I end up doing a big, long thread on this, I think after last week's update, about whether or not photographs alone were biometric data. And the jury is very much out on that. Because are you posting biometric data to your Facebook every time you share a photo of your, I was going to say your breakfast, unless your face, your kids or a holiday or something like that. Yeah, you probably wouldn't consider it that. So I think the way we define biometrics is very important, and I felt it got conflated in that particular incident. Now, as it relates to the question over here, there's a big difference between, let's say it's a fingerprint, which we'd consider much more biometric data. Oh, what was that one I heard the other day? I kept meaning to look this up. Another risky business thing, they were saying one of the photos, someone posted a photo somewhere, had a copy of their fingerprint on it, and someone in law enforcement managed to match that back. Super cool work, by the way. But a fingerprint might be considered biometric data, and I think that's a reasonable description of it. But can you then reproduce that fingerprint in a way that you could authenticate to, say, the fingerprint reader on my laptop? In just the same way as there might have been photos leaked from Out of Box, but just because there's a photo leaked, can you then go and like print it out and just strap it in front of your head and walk into a pub and it thinks you're John Smith or someone like that? So I think when we talk about DNA and unlocking devices, a lot of it has got to do with the authenticator itself, so the device. Now, if you think about something like a modern iPhone, it's not just a camera. There's also an infrared camera, so it can sense heat. There's also a dot sensor, so it can sense distance and depth, so you can't just wrap the photo of someone around your head. So it's a lot more complex than just having the DNA material. You've got to be able to fool the authenticator as well. All right. James says, awesome, Troy. Got up with the projector sitting in the hot tub. Now, one of the reasons I'm doing this now at 4:30 in the afternoon is so I can finish in time to go and get in the hot tub with Charlotte, and that's going to be my Friday afternoon, sitting in there in the hot tub with my beautiful wife, having a cold drink on a Friday afternoon, and that just sounds like heaven to me right now. James says, got new ID earlier today, no biometrics stored in it. UHF long-range RFID tag. Serial number can be used to pull up biometrics. It came with a Faraday sleeve from the state. Jeez. What sort of ID is that, James? That's kind of fascinating. While you answer that, Dell got breached. Now, Dell has appeared on my timeline a couple of times because one of them is I've had a gazillion different people. That is the technical term for a large number of people, send me messages from Dell. And the title here is an important message about your Dell information. This is a Dell disclosure notice. You know that they've had a data breach because they start by saying Dell Technologies takes the privacy and confidentiality of your information seriously, which is the way every single data breach after a company hasn't taken it seriously enough begins. We're currently investigating an incident. Dell portal, database with limited types of customer information. What was accessed? Name, physical address, Dell hardware and order information, including service tag, item description, date of order, related warranty information. I would suggest that it's the name and the physical address, and the information involved does not include financial payment information, email addresses, telephone numbers, or any highly sensitive customer information. That doesn't seem too bad in the scheme of things. Names and physical addresses. And Dell stuff that you bought. So anyway, that has obviously gone to a very large number of people, given the gazillion messages I got. It was posted to a popular hacking forum. I went to find that post just before I did this live stream. Post had gone. This person says, the person who posted originally, my old thread was removed by the mods due to expired sample link, so some people thought the data was sold. But no, I'm still the sole owner of this data and I'm planning to sell it to one individual only. I don't have email phone number for this 49 million, but I do have email and phone number of some several thousand, which is a lot less than 49 million, all recent. Included types of data, full name of person, company name, address, city, province, postal code, all of this is still address, mate. So the claim here seems to line up pretty well with Dell's disclosure notice. Top five countries with most systems. Number one, US. Number two, China. Number three, India. Number four, Australia, representing. Number five, Canada. I would argue that in the scheme of things, let's have a look at the sample data here. There's a gzip that I'm going to download. Screw it. I would argue that in the scheme of things, this is not too bad as data breaches go. So it would feel like Dell's done the right thing, got on the front foot and disclosed very quickly. And I don't think it's going to be too bad for people that are in there. That's that one done. Now, James says, enhanced ID, I can travel to Canada and Mexico with it by land. Okay. Joel's not happy about the Dell one. He's in the Dell one. Brendan says, if the service takes the serial number of a given device, if so, very much no. Correction, if so, very much oh shit. Good question, Brendan. What can you do with the serial number of a given Dell device? Can you resolve that back to a customer and further identity data? While you think about that, next one, Tapware. Now, you have probably not heard of Tapware unless you're from Bangladesh. And I don't have a large Bangladeshi audience. I would like to expand it. But as far as I know, my numbers are quite limited in that part of the world. Sin have I been pwned? 95,000 email addresses breached last month. Also includes name, job title, date of birth, gender, religion, national ID card scans, and other labor-related information. Now, this looked much worse than what it turned out to be, at least in terms of like the raw email address numbers. But there were a couple of interesting things about this. So first of all, the data is spread out there through all the usual channels. It actually has a very large size. This was, I'm looking at the disclosure notice here, from the Bangladeshi Cybersecurity Intelligence, that's a BCSI, government department. They said 50 gigabytes. The data I had, I think, was about 100 gigabytes. And what made it so large was scans of the national ID cards. So that's probably bad news for folks there. And it seems to be a lot of labor-related information. So my assumption is that Tapware created software to manage your workforce, and one or more companies use this data to collect all of this information about their employees. And that included the obvious stuff, you know, name, address, phone number. For reasons that I don't understand, but might be a local cultural thing, your religion. And from memory, most people were either Muslim or Hindu, which are Bangladesh. I assume that that is a reasonable assumption. I don't know why you'd collect that. But again, maybe that's just, can you imagine in Australia going for a job? Saying, okay, how many years of experience? C-sharp, JavaScript, what religion are you? It's like, screw you. That's none of your business. Now, what I found actually really interesting about this wasn't the breach itself, but it was the government coverage of it. So bcsi.gov.bd, again, the Bangladeshi Cybersecurity Intelligence, they posted a screen cap of the data that has a whole bunch of PII in it. Now, I'm going to drop this into the chat as well for folks that are interested in following along here. So I can't recall seeing a government talk about a data breach, and we do see a lot of governments talk about different data breaches, whether it be everything from the NCA and Lockbit SUP and all that sort of stuff we just talked about. Our Oz government has spoken about many data breaches recently, including the Unboxed one that we just spoke about. I can never remember it. The Clubs New South Wales one. I can't remember a government ever doxing people in a data breach. And that's exactly what it is. And if you have a look at that link, this is Bangladeshi government, so I feel it's reasonable to share the post that they made, and they've got people's PII in there, which fascinates me. We are becoming a more liberal society as it comes to, I guess, governments sharing information about data breaches and so on. Okay. Someone made a comment here. Probably to determine public holidays as it relates to religion. Does it ever make you wonder which religion gets the most public holidays? What is the right answer when you're asked about your religion when you go for a job? It's like, let me see. If you're Christian, you got Easter, you got Christmas. If you're Muslim, which one gets Diwali? Diwali seems really cool. Anyway, maybe that's an interesting factor that might play into how you disclose information to a potential employer. All right, let's talk about the big interesting one of this week, and more specifically of today. And I spent way more hours today going through this than what I would normally, for reasons that I'll explain as I unfold the whole thing. Now, this is another one of these things where I had never heard of the site. I had no preconceptions about it. I'm not American. I'm not really interested in politics. And yes, this one is Canadian, but it seems to be very American. Let me explain. There is a media outlet called the Post Millennial. Now, what's fun, it's just easier sometimes to, maybe we'll just read, I could read the Wikipedia description, but then even my daughter the other day, let me know my daughter, she's like, our teachers say you can't use Wikipedia. It's like, why not? I said, well, because people can change it. Like, yeah. Well, but you have to cite references. Why is this a problem? Oh, it can be subjective. Now, she didn't say subjective, but obviously that was where they're going. I'm trying to find the right way of describing this, I guess, independently. Now, if you're working ahead of me, feel free to drop that in the chat. The Post-Millennial is an English language conservative Canadian online news magazine. Founded in 2017, it publishes national and local news and has a large amount of opinion content. It has been owned by Human Events Media Group, the parent company of American conservative website Human Events, since 2022. Now, I had multiple people reach out to me about this incident, and some of the communication I had from people, I was just having a little bit of trouble understanding what had actually happened. And the first bit of communication I got, and keeping in mind, I get many, many, many emails, DMs, signal messages, like whatever, every single day about data breaches. And I have to try and figure out what is the stuff that requires attention and is serious versus what is the stuff that, I mean, when I got, just before doing this live stream, it's like, yeah, I found something with like 3,000 people in it. Okay, that's probably not significant. So I'm trying to filter this out. And it took me a while and multiple people flagging the same thing to really realize the significance of this. Now, the post-millennial is very conservative-orientated news. Now, for people outside of, let's say, North America, so we can be inclusive of the US and Canada together, for people outside North America, for the most part, I don't think we really think a lot about this. And I say this as an Australian who spends a lot of time in Europe, has lived in the Netherlands for a couple of years, has a Norwegian wife, has lived in Singapore for many years. Like, I feel like I have a reasonable global grasp. And there is something about North America that is very polarizing on conservatives and liberals. So people tend to get very angry at one side or the other. Here, for the most part, we don't really give too much of a shit. I'm not even sure who our prime minister is at the moment. It keeps changing the whole time. No, it's not Morrison. Albanese. I literally had to think about it. So, Oh, John Britto's here. Blame Canada. Right. So you probably know this, mate. You would also agree, as a fellow Gold Coaster, that we don't really give too much thought to who's in power or who's doing what. And we're certainly not too adamant about wearing our colours on our sleeve as to which political party you're aligned to. Now, the way I've seen the post-millennial represented is I've seen people say far right, ultra-conservative, whatever. And if you have a look through the headlines, and again, for the sake of folks following at home, I'll just drop that into the chat. It seems to be a bit anti-Biden, pro-Trump. There's a story here, trans runner obliterates female competition. Maybe, I don't know, but you can get a sense of the angle that this news outlet takes. And for me, the way I have to look at every one of these data breaches is I really don't care too much about the politics, the religion or anything like that. What we're interested in is what actually happened. Now, what we know from this incident is we know that the website was defaced. And I'm just going to pull up the news story here. And I picked, there's many, many news stories about this. And I picked one that to me felt the least inflammatory because there were ones that were very negative about the political leanings of this particular website. So the one I picked here says conservative news website hacked, replaced with page leaking private information. Now this website is, I don't know if run is the right word, but the senior editor is a guy called Andy Ngo. That's an NGO, apparently Vietnamese descent, hence the last name. And someone has defaced the website and replaced it with a message about him coming out as trans. Now, as I read more and more into this, apparently he is gay, which seemed to be a little bit at odds with a lot of the conservative thinking, but yeah, whatever, it's 2024. Again, let's focus on the data. But it really felt like someone was trying to be antagonistic towards conservative values by posting a message, which, just reading from the news story here, says, "Dear readers of the Post-Millennial," now again, this is the hackers writing this, this is not Andy, "I'm writing to you today to share something deeply personal and important to me. After much soul searching, I come to the realization that I'm a trans individual and I would like to officially introduce myself as Angelina Ngo, a woman." And then it goes on with a whole bunch of other hacker stuff, meant to sound like him. "P.S. I'm also sharing with you all of our mailing lists." Three things. Mailing lists, subscriber databases, and personal details of all our writers and editors, along with links to download the private information. So, the site definitely got seriously, seriously owned and defaced. No doubt about that. Wait, Troy taking dark mode to the extreme. So, they got properly owned. Now, the three classes of data that were leaked are very interesting. The two of them, a little bit interesting. The third one, super interesting. I'm going to do this in the reverse order to which they're posted because this is going to be an interesting incrementing increments. Let's just say that. So, a list of editors for the site. When you read this website and you look at all the different stories here, like any news outlet, every story has a writer slash editor for the story. A large number of those were then leaked in a JSON file that includes their name, their email address, their phone number, and what I assume is their home address. Now, the email addresses were on all sorts of different domains, so they appear to be personal email addresses. I assume that many of the folks writing for this are freelancers. And that's a worrying thing for them, because particularly in a very politically charged environment, if they're writing things that incite other people to do crazy things, and occasionally that does, even in Australia, that happens. That's a bit concerning, because it doxes those individuals. So whoever has done this has released a large amount of information about the journos. That JSON file abruptly cuts off. It's like, you know, attribute name, value, curly brace, comma, end of file. It's like, it's clearly missing data. So many of the names that I could find on the website then lined up to names in the data with email addresses that reflected those names and the addresses. Certainly no reason to suspect that they weren't legitimate at all. Some of the people on the website, this is the journos, did not then appear in the data, I assume because of where it got truncated. The latest records in the data, if I go back to my thread just here, because I put it all in there, the latest record was the 27th of April this year. So that is very, very recent. So that's number one. Now, there were hundreds of email addresses in there. I think from memory, I didn't put it in the thread, I think it was about 700 email addresses. The next one was a bit more interesting, and that's users.json, and that's pretty self-explanatory based on the name. So that had almost 40,000 rows, and that appears to be individuals who have subscribed to the service. So there is a facility here to register. You used to be able to register using OAuth, so you could use your Facebook or your Gmail or something like that, register to the site, and then access the content without having to create a new account. The real kicker in the user's file is there's plain text passwords everywhere. Now, just to pause for a second, this data has been spread so broadly. There are so many comments about it on Twitter. A bunch of it was archived by archive.org. I understand that that has now been removed, hence my saying it. Going through the Twitter threads from people talking about it, you can see how many people have actually seen the data, because they're like, holy shit, like I just looked at it and there's plain text passwords everywhere, which is fascinating for 2024, given that it is a current system. Now, what I will say is that the last data in that user records appears to be from July 2022. So you almost get the feeling that someone's grabbed access to backups as opposed to current live data. But that's a big concern for the folks in there, because inevitably those passwords are going to unlock all sorts of other accounts. But here's the wildest thing, and the thing that I'm sure I'm going to get a gazillion emails overnight, because I've already got a bunch during my day tonight when a lot of you are asleep and a lot of Americans and Canadians are asleep too. And that is the bit about the mailing list. Now, let me just find the term that's been used here. And I just read it, but just to reiterate it. P.S. I'm also sharing with you all of our mailing lists. Okay, so what does that mean? So there was a .zst archive, so that's the compression algorithm from the Facebook folks, which contained thousands of files. And in the Twitter thread, I posted a directory tree. Someone had already posted that publicly. It's just names of files. And it appears to be a large number of CSV files. I think I found about 3,500 of them that have a very conservative lean to many of the names. So for example, in the thread, I said, just search for guns. Now, as I was going to say, as an Australian, but I think as pretty much anyone not in North America, guns are what police officers, normal people don't have guns. It's just a weird thing. But anyway, that's American. 7 different files with guns in them. Gun Save Lives Day. .csv. Gun Save Lives Day CRPAC form. .csv. PY Guns. Cluster 8 Cowboy Guns. Cluster 8 Cowboy Guns 2. Real Facts About Guns. Truth Patriot Guns. It's a lot of guns. So there's that. And then you look at something like, say, Obama. And this is where, and John, I don't know if you can sort me out here, but this is where I was a little bit confused, because this is a Canadian media outlet, but it seems to be very US-centric. 32 references to Obama. The first one's come up here halfway down the page. And this is the file name. It's got dashes in between and no proper punctuation. Let's send Congress a message. Defund Obamacare now.csv. Obama arm the enemy. Obamacare bailout. Obama executive orders. Defund Obamacare. Repeal Obamacare. Say it, Obama. Lots of variations of that. Stop Obama executive action petition. Nothing is like, thank Obama for being an eloquent speaker. Or, you know, like, there's nothing positive. You know what? I didn't even look for Trump. Is it Trump? Ooh, 36 Trumps, not as many as Obamas. Trump 2016 con call, Trump volunteers, Trump winery watch party, Trump delegates, Trump walks Wednesday, Trump. Any other interesting Trump stuff? Trump PAC donors. How will Trump's gun stance affect your vote? Yeah, and it's that. I guess the point is that all of these file names align with what you would expect to be conservative US values, and are supportive of that viewpoint and less supportive of the other viewpoint. Oh, there's Pence. Pence event, August. Is it wrong that I probably know more American politicians than Australian ones? So you've got all of these files. Now, I have been very careful in the breach description and in the Twitter thread I put out to say the folks that hacked the website, which is beyond doubt because the thing got defaced, have alleged that this is the mailing list from the post-millennial. It has all the signs of being what you would expect to be mailing lists that a conservative news agency would use. There is nothing to emphatically tie it back. And a week after the incident happened, as far as I know, there is no statement at all from the agency. Now, that makes it a little bit hard because, and I always say to this to organizations, when I do talk to companies who have a data breach, if you want to do disclosure, I say, look, create the narrative that you want to lead the press with. If you don't say anything, if you stay quiet, then everyone else will create the narrative around you. Now, that may be mostly right. There may be spins on it you don't like, but if you're silent, you don't get to control the narrative at all. And at the moment, for a website that does a lot of talking, they've done very little talking about this incident. So we're just having to go on what's been represented and to draw some reasonable conclusions at the moment. Now, here's where it gets really messy. The total size of the data breach was, I think it rounded to 27 million records, and more than 99% of them are from those mailing lists. Now, where did those mailing lists come from? As I've started to break this down, I've talked about some of the file names here. What you find is that these CSVs are all sorts of different formats. It's not from one place. Some of the CSVs just have email addresses. Some of them have email addresses and IP addresses. Some of them have the address that people left their data at. So in the thread here, I've given an example. There's a file called 10156 Obama Hates Veterans. It's CSV, which is just, it's so stupidly, deliberately inflammatory. Over 7,000 records from there. And when you go to the archive.org version of the URL that is in that file, you see a sign-up page. That's actually just opened up. That's what it says. It wasn't that blatant on the sign-up page about Obama hating veterans. Demand better treatment for our veterans. Our warriors deserve better. Join SOS in demanding the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States of America, and Congress keep their promise. Now, this was in 2014, so it would have been Obama then. Keep their promise to provide quality. Don't know who the Australian, I was going to say Australian President. Don't know who the Australian Prime Minister was then. But I do know it was Obama in the US. Keep their promise to provide quality healthcare and respect, all uppercase, for our veterans. And again, this is what you would expect a conservative outlet to want. And here's where I want to qualify this. The post-millennial, allegedly based on all the caveats, what seems to be really clear is these 3,000 plus CSV files have come from other places where people have willingly provided their data. They've agreed to the terms and conditions, which, like you and I, they never read, but they're like, yeah, sure, others. I'm passionate about this. Name, email address, IP gets snared on the way in. And it then appears this data has ended up at the post-millennial. Now, did they buy it? Were they gifted it? Were there other contra deals? Or like, I don't know. What we do know is that this data has not come from the post-millennial as the first point of entry, which means that more than 99% of people who got notifications from Have I Been Pwned have got this notification, which does clearly state that. It says, this is alleged to have come from the post-millennial website. The data was not collected from them. It's come from other certs. But you've now got all these people going, like, why am I on a conservative website data breach? Down the bottom of my thread here, one of the really interesting things is now seeing the feedback that comes back from people is someone said, this email address was first used for the Motley Fool investing newsletter and nowhere else, because someone's got a catch-all domain and they're just creating aliases based on the website they sign up to. Now, they're in a file called supp_fool_3.txt, which had thousands of fool at email addresses. Now, the Motley Fool, that's not Australian, is it? Motley Fool. Why does it sound so familiar? Well, there's Motley Fool Australia. Is it Australia? I don't know. The person did reply to me during Australian waking hours. But it's going to create this situation now where people are very confused about why their data is in this breach. And I'm seeing that come through in the people reaching out to me and providing comments. And all I can really do is say, look, here's the Twitter thread where I'm explaining as much as I can. When I learn something new, like that Motley Fool one, I put a little note on there. I add another tweet to the thread. And we're just going to have to see how it pans out. I mean, obviously post-millennial isn't making comments on this. They obviously know about it because the website got defaced. There's been a huge amount of press and a huge amount of the organization itself and Andy being looped into discussions, but nobody saying anything about it, which I find quite fascinating. And I'm also seeing the threads where people are saying, you've got to disclose this. Like, you've had a breach. You can't just sit there and do nothing. And we know you've had a data breach because your literal website got freaking defaced. There's no negotiation about whether you had a breach or not. And then there's a discussion about, well, what was actually included? You know, for example, these mailing lists, what was the nature of them? Like, were they sitting there on the website? Did someone get access to a back office? Like, I don't know. Anyway, that was my morning. Let's read the comments. Where do you get to here? John Bristow, my good mate who lives here, originally Canadian, now Australian. We're so closely located to the US, we share the largest unprotected international border, lots of news and politics, absorbed by osmosis. Trump rabbit hole, something here. Simon says, more accounts than the population of Australia. Very, very close. What is our population now? It's about 27 million. Population of Australia. But yeah, that is an interesting way. 26 million, 26.01 as of 2022. But maybe that's 27 million now. Oh, here we go. Australian population 2024, 26.661 million. So, yep, you're right. Maybe right for another year too. Who knows? Barry, hello from Ireland. It's been a while since I could listen live. Hope you're well. Yeah, man, we're good. Keeping busy. Martin says, got a lot of HIBP working domain alert, which is interesting, worrying. It is interesting to see what comes through, isn't it? James says, they probably have one of my old email addresses. It was like stock stuff, if I remember correctly. Martin says, with the big financial advice thing back a decade or more, this is obviously the Motley Fool. Look, well, I guess we'll see what happens. Inevitably, after a data breach like this, when it goes very, very public, and this is very public, it's on a popular hacking forum, it was extensively torrented, I think it would be very surprising if there weren't thousands of people that already had this data, literally thousands of people. And of course, it's replicating all the time. And there will be many people in the data set who seek the data out and find it and then ask some hard questions. So I can't imagine post-millennial not at some point in time having to respond to this, either because people reach out and they make a comment, or there will always be some subset of people who get angry enough that they go and want to take some legal action. And there's a whole other story here. I don't think that that's a good idea in the vast majority of data breach cases. I think something like this is annoying. It pisses you off. They wonder why you have the data. It probably doesn't really do you any real world harm. Having been in dozens and dozens of data breaches myself, but it is annoying, particularly if your data has ended up somewhere that you didn't expect it to be. And I think it's probably a good way to start closing this out. The big thing that upsets people at data breaches is when they see their data retained or used in ways they didn't expect. And I say this as someone who's been in not just so many recent data breaches, but last year, Latitude Financial, one of the trilogy of Australian major data breaches towards the end of 2022, start 2023, because somewhere in the 90s, I had a loan that I don't even remember, and they still had my data, and someone snared it last year, and I just cannot for life me understand. It's one of those cases where you just don't expect that to happen. John says, I hate your HIBP emails. Thank you, mate, and I hate getting them from me as well, and I do get a lot from me. Multiple occasions where I've loaded a data breach and gone, oh, that's a good job, I'm done with that. I'll go and have a beer and relax. And I go, oh, crap, I got an email. A couple of occasions where Shah's gone, I just got an email from you. What's that about? I don't know. So you have a life on the internet, so you're in data breaches. Okay, folks, I'm going to wrap it up there. That's the end for today for me. That's my Friday. That is my hot tub time with my wife. So I'm tuning out and going and doing that. See you later.